warm word of welcome to all of you. Special welcome to the Minister of Communication and the Deputy Minister, both of whom are seated in front. We are quite privileged to have them for the first meeting. And I hope that, I think this is the first time we've come to the Portfolio Committee meeting. So maybe I should ask the members just to introduce themselves. And our side, we're hoping that we can have a very constructive working relationship. Sometimes there might be tensions. That's in the nature of our work, but we hope that those tensions will be resolved in the interest of the public good, and that they don't take an adversarial form and a conflictual form. Generally, as a committee, we try not to be difficult with our ministers, but sometimes we have to hold you to account. And if we can't do the job, we set up the opposition to do it for us. But yesterday, if yesterday is anything to go by, this opposition has agreed with everything the ANC said yesterday. So I think we're in for good times. But welcome to all of you and to the DG and her team, the acting DG and the team from communications. And I know there are many other stakeholders here and other state-owned entities. Some of the delegates are represented here. Welcome to all of you also. Over to the minister. If you might want to say make a few remarks or some comments. Otherwise, we hand over to the DG.
No, I think we have just come to present ourselves here. To get to know the flesh. And obviously to promise that we will cooperate with the Portfolio Committee, and we hope to establish a very sound working relationship with the committee, and you can trust that when called upon to account for the department, we will and as much as is possible to so diligently, truthfully, honestly, we appreciate the opportunity. We are going to be presenting the strategic plan here, which we have interacted with on several occasions with the department, and we are going to ask to be excused early because we have other business to attend to. I have to travel and catch a flight early. And, I don't know if the deputy minister wanted to say anything. It's a pleasure really to be with you and to express the desire to work. We have a fruitful relationship going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Thanks. I think the minister has summarized all what I would have loved to say, except to say that I'm also pleased to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Maybe the members of the committee should just introduce themselves. I think all the other stakeholders have also said, hey, this is a new committee and lots of new faces. So it's a good time for you to also say hello to all of them. Let's start with this time.
Langa Lakem Chiza from ANC.
Trevor
Ruta
from the ANC.
Trevor Bonham from ANC.
Johnny Bill, ANC.
Roman Newark Division, ANC. Voicing for me is sign language interpreter Rana and just go to the second.
Chairperson, my name is Vicky van der Berg. I'm the spokesperson on communications for the Democratic Alliance, and just want to make a correction. I didn't agree anything with the ANC said. I agreed with some of the government departments said yesterday, and I must say their presentation was very, very good, and we must sort of keep government and the ANC apart from each other.
That's the kind of opposition we need.
I'm Lindy Ovasimbuba, and I'm also from the Democratic Alliance.
Secretary, Judy Killian, I'm from COPE.
And we also have Reverend Musa Zondi from the IFC. I don't see him here, but I know he's a member of this committee. All right, then I think we've done with the formalities. I hand over to the acting DG to introduce herself and the team to take us with the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. Seeing that it is a new Busara Committee, let also us go through our introductions. I will first ask the team of the leadership to introduce themselves and thereafter the strategic support team. My name is Khada Khrabe and I'm the Acting Director General.
Good afternoon, Chair, Honourable Member, Minister, Deputy Minister. My name is Erima Tarate, DDG for Finance and ICT Enterprise Development.
Afternoon, all protocol observed. My name is Keith Shaw, I'm the DDG for ICT International Affairs and Trade.
Thank you, Honourables. I'm Rosie Fakensa, DDG for ICT Infrastructure Development.
Good afternoon, my name is Mukwining Klafu, I'm the DDG responsible for the PNC on Asset.
Good afternoon, my name is Naman Mzerere, acting DDG for Development.
Good afternoon, my name is Basani Baloyi, acting DDG Government and Administration and Chief Operations Officer.
Good afternoon, my name is Harold Lesser and I'm the acting CEO of Morocco Institute.
Chairperson and all protocol observed, my name is Manasim Patele and I'm the Chief Director and the Office of the Director General.
Good afternoon, my name is Mapiso Malagu, I'm the Chief Director responsible for Finance.
Good afternoon, my name is Farhad Osman, the Chief Director of Strategic Planning and Monitoring.
With the introduction done, we can start with the presentation. Chairperson, as per our discussion, because it's a new, mostly new members in the Busara Committee, it will be a little bit longer than the committee is used to, just to also introduce the mandate of the department, what our roles and responsibilities are, before we get into what we are presenting today, our strategic plan. With regard to the strategic plan, I just wish to confirm that this plan for the period 2009 and 2012 is in line with the approved medium-term strategic framework of the government, and that was informed by the electoral mandate for the same period. We did go through a reprioritization process after we concluded the strategic plan, because there were budget cuts after the initial allocation from National Treasury following the global meltdown. So our presentation will indicate what are our strategic goals and our objectives, our deliverables, as well as the budget that was allocated for this MTF period. The department's mandate is to create a favorable ICT environment that ensures that our country has the capacity to advance its socio-economic goals and that we support the renewal of Africa and contribute to building a better world. Having said that, we defined our vision as to be that South Africa is a global leader in the development and use of information and communication technologies, or ICTs for short, that we use that for socio-economic development. In order to achieve that, our mission is building a better life for all through enabling and sustainable world-class ICT environment. I just want to confirm that our mandate is derived from all the relevant legislation that pertains to this sector. Our function, therefore, is to develop ICTs and policies to create conditions for accelerated growth of the South African economy and that positively impact on the well-being of all our people, to ensure the development of robust, reliable, affordable, and secure ICT infrastructure that supports and enables the provision of a multiplicity of applications and services to meet the needs of the country and its people. Another function is to strengthen the regulator, the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, ICASA, to enable it to regulate the sector
in the public interest and ensure growth and stability in the sector. We also have a function to enhance the capacity of and exercise oversight over our state-owned enterprises, which are our delivery arms of government, because as a department we do not have any presence in the provinces. There's one national department, and our state-owned enterprises are critical for delivery and implementation of our policies. And then our function is also to fulfill South Africa's continental and international responsibilities in the ICT field globally. We also have links to the department, the Presidential National Commission on Information Society and Development. And the mandate of this commission, when it was established, it is to advise the President on the use of ICTs to optimize the pace and the extent of addressing South Africa's developmental challenges and enhancing South Africa's global competitiveness, as well as our contribution to and benefit from the development of an inclusive information society, not just South Africa and Africa, but in the world. It's also to facilitate the coordinated and integrated development of an inclusive information society of South Africa, and then to support efforts aimed at making South Africa and Africa integral and equal members of the global information society. So the vision of the PNC is to be leaders on the development of an inclusive information society, and we will achieve that through the mission of building an inclusive information society in which human rights, socio-economic prosperity and participatory democracy are fully realized through optimizing the usage of ICTs for a better life for all. And if you read that and you think what we said, what the vision and mission of the department is, you can see it is supportive to that. Having said that, about the mandate and the vision and mission, the role of the PNC is to facilitate the coordinated and accelerate the development of this inclusive information society. And the two core functions is to advise on building an inclusive information society and facilitate the development of that society. The strategic plan that is developed for 3 years basically talks to 6 strategic goals, and for each of those we have strategic objectives. Chairperson, with your indulgence, that is in the document, the strategic plan that was developed, so I don't think we need to go into that unless you want me to read that. Okay, our first goal is to enable the maximization of investment in the ICT infrastructure, and our objective there is to create conditions for accelerated growth. And we will do that through the development and implementation of the ICT policies and strategies. Our second goal is to ensure that we've got ICT infrastructure that is robust, reliable, affordable and secure. And our goal to achieve, our objective to achieve that goal is to support and enable the provisioning of multiplicity of ICT applications and services, and we will do that through the facilitation of the modernization of the ICT infrastructure. The third strategic goal is to accelerate the socio-economic development of South Africans by increasing access to, as well as the uptake and usage of ICTs, but importantly through partnerships with business and civil society and across all 3 spheres of government. We've got 4 objectives there. The first one is to increase the universal access and services, and one of our SOEs play a key role here. Contribute to increasing the ICT skills base in South Africa and to increase access to and uptake and usage of ICTs. The third objective is to facilitate the growth and development of SMEs as well as to improve their sustainability through the use of these technologies. And then the last one is to promote the ICT agenda across all stakeholders in order to ensure an integrated and efficient service delivery to communities. The next strategic goal is internally focused, looking at building an effective information organization so that we can contribute to the priorities of government.
And our objective there is to ensure the optimal functioning of the department through building an efficient and effective leadership cadre for developmental states, and through integrating and aligning operational processes and systems. The fifth goal is to enhance the role of ICT state-owned enterprises as the delivery arms of government, and our objective there is to provide efficient and effective oversight of state-owned enterprises and other entities. And the sixth goal is to contribute to building an inclusive information society globally by prioritizing Africa's development. We've got four objectives there. It's support the African agenda through active participation and implementation of NATO, as well as African multilateral and bilateral ICT programs. Number two is strengthen South-South cooperation to support economic development. The next one is to participate in major ICT summits and conferences and implement the outcomes thereof. And then also to contribute to creating an enabling internet environment through the development of policies and strategies that positively impact on the well-being of South Africans. We've got a similar map for the PNC. The strategic goal one is that the information society and development plan finds expression in all the plans and programs of all three spheres of government. Our objective there is to leverage the political leadership through our information society and development institutional mechanisms, and those are the Ministerial Committee on Information Society and Development. There is a FOSAC cluster on that, and the FOSAC cluster for members is the cluster of Directors General. And we also have Information Society and Development Intergovernmental Relations Forum. The second goal is the Information Society Enables Youth. Our objective there is to focus on youth and ensure their active participation in Information Society programs. The next goal is improve quality of life of the poor by prioritizing the second economy interventions in building the Information Society. And our goal is to increase the uptake and usage of ICTs by SMEs, women, youth, people with disabilities, the non-formal sector, and also the development of ICT SMEs. The fourth goal is to integrate and coordinate the building of the Information Society and accelerate its improved service delivery. We will do that through the effective functioning of the FOSAT ICT cluster and the IGRF Technical Committee. The fifth goal is that the PNC on Information Society and Development is a hub of government machinery for the development of the Information Society, and the goal is that PNC on ICT as a model knowledge-driven organization. The sixth goal is initiate efforts in making South Africa and Africa an integral and equal member of the Global Information Society. And we will do that by facilitating the sharing of experience and expertise in achieving an inclusive information society, again prioritizing the region, continent, and South Africa. At this point, Chair, I will hand over to Mr. Batabati, who is also the Chief Financial Officer, who will take us through our budget.
Thank you very much, NPG, Chairperson, honorable members. My presentation will just briefly cover on the resources we have at our disposal to carry out some of the functions that the acting DG spoke to. It will be brief in part because when the acting DG takes us to the key focus area, she will again indicate the resources per program that we have to do our work. The first slide I talked to is the three-year allocation for the department as well as state-owned entities. And we have it per program from 2009-2010 to 2010-2011-2012. Administration, I won't go through every figure, Chairperson, but you know, just to say administration, which houses the ministry minister, deputy minister, the COO's office, your main support function, has been about 7% of the budget at 152 million per annum and rising to 168 in 2011-2012. International Affairs and Trade, 2% of the budget, about 46 million and going to 51 million. ICT Policy Development, the core of the department, if you like, at 94 million and 188, rising to 188 million, comprising about 9% of the budget. ICT Enterprise Development, 18 million and rising to 16 million, and the bulk of the budget of the DOC goes to the state-owned entities. Will give you an overview of that figure at 60% in 1.3 billion going up to 1.5 billion in the after year of the NTF period. Another important aspect of our work, ICT infrastructure development, 90 million and rising to 110 million in 2011-2012. The transfers is in the main the 2010 guarantees to ensure that we do meet those at 458 million. That's why you see those transfers being 20% in the first year and going down to 0.007 because you know, the cap will be over by 2011, unfortunately. The PNC at 34 million and 38 million, representing 1.8 million, 1.8% of the total budget. And we have a total of about 2.2 billion, going down to 2.1 billion. And just to give you a sense, we take off the once-off items, the once-off items being allocation for 2010. In that 800 million, you've got 600 million for Telkom. Telkom being one of the companies we use to really achieve the guarantees on 2010, as well as Centech, and that will include 2010-2011. So you take that off. The 2011-2012 would also bring in funding for your digital migration, which within in the goodness of time, that would, as a three-year project, would go down. And that allows us to have a fair sense of the allocation, the increases and decreases. The decrease in, of 2.4 in 2011 is in part to some of the cuts that we had because of the downturn in the economy. Just a high-level overview, a pie chart of what the budget looks like. As you said, the significant transfers going to the SOEs, with the next one being infrastructure development and in the main making provision for 2010. Just to touch on some of the SOEs that we have, which the acting DG did touch on, is our, in effect, our delivery arms. We don't have that national or local presence. SAPO, having been established in terms of the Post Office Act of 1958 as a government business enterprise that provides postal and related services to the SA public. Again, all these entities will be coming before the committee to present, so they will give further information. The SABC, established in terms of the Broadcasting Act of 1936, and with two arms, one being the public broadcasting services and the other one the commercial broadcasting services. Centec, having been established in terms of the Centec Act as a common carrier to provide broadcasting signal distribution for broadcasting licenses and to provide international carrier voice services as well as multimedia services. The National Electronic Media Institute of South Africa, NEMISA, a non-profit organization in terms of the Companies Act, to provide much-needed skills training at an advanced level for the broadcasting industry. The Universal Service and Access Agency of South Africa, USASA, established in terms of Section 58 of the Telecom Act to promote universal service and access to communications technologies and services for South Africa, as well as to manage the Universal Service Fund. The .za Domain Name Authority, established in terms of Chapter 10 of the Electronic Communication and Transactions Act of 2002, to take responsibility for the .za domain space. ICASA is an SOE of the DOC. It's a regulator which implements the policy of the DOC. I can see the chair looking at me. We should have had this in a different slide. allocations to SOEs over the MTF process, over the MTF period. The first being Telkom, those 2010 guarantees at 600 million, SAPO for the subsidy, and in the main, this subsidy are used for universal service of the obligations that really aimed at meeting government objectives. ICASA at 269, 320, and I must say, you know, one of the objectives of the DOC over the years is to resource adequately ICASA, and I'm almost correct when I say in 5 years, the allocation is almost tripled to ICASA in line with that mandate. The funding for Centec is in the main for 2010 and to replace its digital infrastructure, which is aging. Again, they'll talk to that when they come to you. SABC public broadcasting, you would realize that the first 2 years, you know, we have about in the region of 200 million, and in the final year, 85 million for SABC. That is partly because SABC was granted an allocation to modernize its infrastructure and not necessarily for digital migration. That we currently are discussing with the SABC and we'll finalize that soon, as well as the funding for the broadcasting, for the public broadcasting services. NEMESA, the training entity, being our product cousins, at 29 and 37 million. USASA, 33, 69. And 86 million, and the fund at 36 million. You'll see the fund having a significant increase in the last 2 years, and that's in the main for your set-top boxes, provision for the set-top boxes that has been allocated through your system. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister. You have now heard the financial resources that we have in place to implement the strategic plan. Our human resource capacity is as follows. On the structure, we have 429 positions, of which 306 is currently filled, and there's 153 vacant positions. Of that 153, 77 is funded. But due to financial constraints, I just have to say up front, it will not be possible to fill all those vacant positions this year. But as we did in past years, we will again go through a prioritization process to make sure that the critical positions are filled. There are currently 30 employees who are additional to the establishment that we are busy looking at the placement. We did go through a restructuring of our organization about 2 years ago. The new structure was only approved by the beginning of last year, and that means some people were not placed on the structure. Chairperson, we will go into the various programs now. And as Mr. Bhattavarti indicated, that we will repeat the budget allocation of, for the 3 years, and then indicate what are the key activities and key projects that we plan to roll out. In the program on ICT policy development, which is basically one of the core programs of the department, the focus there will be on broadband policy development and the implementation of a national broadband policy, as well as the development of an integrated national ICT policy. And we intend that once that policy has been approved in the same period, that would lead to the development of the Integrated National ICT Act. We will also implement a 3-year program of action with regard to reducing the cost of communications and improving the quality, availability, and the usage of ICT. And then, I want to say last, but definitely not the least, one of our biggest programs for the next 3 years would be the implementation of our broadcasting digital migration policy, and we refer to it BDM. So if we keep on referring to acronyms, please accept our apologies. Within that big program, the focus will be on the set-top box manufacturing sector development strategy. We will also look at the scheme for ownership support of set-top boxes for poor TV-owning households and local and content, local and digital content development strategy. That is all in line with cabinet decisions that were taken from 2007 about the switch on and switch off of the digital and analog signals, as well as the policy that was approved August last year, which it would include the elements of the set-top box manufacturing and the ownership support. Going on with ICT policy, we are also going to focus at the rollout of postal addresses for South African homes, prioritizing rural areas. We are working closely together with all the relevant role players to make sure that there are addresses. And this is critical because that makes sure that you have a point of reference if there's crime, if there's health needs, that people can get to an address to render the necessary service. We will be also implementing the outcomes of UPU conferences. It's a postal union. The postal policies are critical, and anything around UPU conferences assists us in making sure that our policies and our strategies are aligned with the international guidelines. We also have a legislative program. We intend to table this year the Post Bank Bill, which is actually corporatizing the Post Bank. We will also table the South African Post Office Limited Bill and the Public Service Broadcasting Bill. And lastly, in this program, just to focus on, is to operationalize the Morocco Eastfields Institute. And Chairperson, if you allow us the latitude, I just want to give a little bit more information on the Morocco Eastfields Institute for members to understand why this focus was specifically on this institute. South Africa does not compare well with other countries in terms of ICT skills availability. And although there are numerous initiatives in ICT skills training, there is a definite mismatch between what is taught by the various institutions, number one, and then what skills are actually needed in the workplace. So in 2002, the cabinet approved a conceptual framework for the establishment of what they then called the Advanced Institute for ICT. And it was approved that this institute would comprise of three legs. One is research and development, the second one is applications and development, and the third one is skills development and industry-related issues. Now, the Department of Science and Technology has been allocated the responsibility of the first two legs, while the DOC was tasked to implement the third leg. In 2004, Cabinet approved the establishment of that institute. In the process of the establishment, it was also agreed that the name be changed to the Morocco Institute, which is currently under the auspices of the Department of Science and Technology, and it's located at the CSIR in Pretoria. Now, to implement this for the third leg that was given to the department as a responsibility, we thought to link it with the current institute in terms of the name. The Morocco Eastfield Institute, therefore, should look at how do we advance the quality of life of our people and the workplace readiness of our graduates in an emerging information society and knowledge economy. The Morocco Eastfield Institute will leverage existing institutional capacity in a collaborative manner, and that would include the private sector, academia, and civil society. We will not duplicate what you see. We will just make sure that the gaps are filled. And the focus areas of this institute would be to make sure that we have e-skills for government, we have the appropriate e-skills for business, and the appropriate e-skills for development. Chairperson, honorable members, the next program is ICT infrastructure development. You can see the budget that is available there. Our focus over the next 3 years is to make sure that we develop and monitor the implementation of a cyber security policy. And linked to that is also the establishment of the South African National Computer Security Incident Response Team. Another big program that my colleague referred to when he spoke about the budget is to make sure that we fulfill the FIFA 2010 World Cup ICT guarantees. and that we also facilitate the development and implementation of a 2010 legacy plan linked to the ICT infrastructure that was rolled out and put in place specifically for the 2010 World Cup. We will also look at the development and implementation of the National Frequency Spectrum Policy that is becoming critically important because radio frequency spectrum is a finite resource. We have just so much, and the effective use of this spectrum is critical, and we will be developing a policy in that regard. We will also facilitate the audit of the radio frequency spectrum up to 100 gigahertz. We will focus on connecting the Naledi schools with network coverage for surrounding government institutions. The question might be asked, why the Naledi schools only? Because we've got much more schools. In view of the available budget, we decided to prioritize certain schools, and the best schools we thought would be the Naledi schools, because they would look at schools providing the necessary training and education in maths and science. But we will also start looking at the development of an e-schools connectivity plan so we can make sure that in the end all schools are covered. We will also be implementing the outcomes of ITU conferences. Now, it's the International Telecommunications Union, and they make global decisions about anything related to ICTs, the management thereof, and so they decide on standards. Again, as I mentioned earlier, with the postal union, we need to make sure that we are in line with these decisions, and we have to make sure that our policies are also in line with those decisions. We will also look at developing and implementing the national internet policy. The next program is international affairs and trade. In this program, we divide it into two main areas. The one is to support the development of the Ahurinet and Umujanet project, which is submarine and terrestrial cable project that is aimed at providing connectivity for the continent, but also obviously for South Africa, so we participate in that. And we will influence the ICT agenda for South Africa, but as well as for SADC region and Africa, through our participation in institutions of global governance. There are a number of African ICT programs where we participate in and make sure that the South African position is put there. We've got multilateral and bilateral ICT programs. We have the IPSA, that's the India Brazil South Africa Information Society Annual Plan. There's a whole program on South-South cooperation, and then we've got several multilateral partnerships with international organizations. The next program is ICT Enterprise Development. In this program, we are looking at the growth and increased business efficiency of SMEs through the increased uptake and usage of ICTs and linking of ICT enterprises to new opportunities in the sector. And then the bulk of the work also falls on the state-owned entities that was mentioned by my colleague. With regard to that, our responsibilities are to ensure alignment of the state-owned enterprise strategic plan with government priorities, because as Hallie mentioned, they are our implementation and delivery arms, and we are driving government priorities. We will also monitor the performances against the key performance indicators as set out in their corporate plan. We will also facilitate the process of the conclusion of shareholder compacts and the approval of articles and memoranda of association. The administration program is, as I mentioned before, is quite internally focused, but our big program there linked to the broadcasting digital migration process is the implementation of the eWeb strategy. But for this 3 years, because of the funding limitations, we will be prioritizing the broadcasting digital awareness campaign. This program will also look at integrating the ICT agenda across all spheres of government. Just to repeat again, our department do not have provincial presence, but our policies are implemented across all three spheres of government. And it also impacts on these service delivery. So it is very important that we relate to all spheres of government that to make sure that ICTs are on their planning agenda. We will also start implementing an annual stakeholder engagement program. We've got a number of stakeholders in this sector, and we want to formalize our engagement. We were looking at improving our own internal business processes. We will also, as a department, contribute to government war on poverty campaigns. And the issue of gender disability youth and children has been a priority of government for a number of years, and we have established a chief director in the Director General's office to make sure that issues relating to the gender disability youth and children are mainstream in the programs, not just of the department, but also the state-owned entities. And then lastly, in terms of the programs, the PNC, we will aim to support provinces and municipalities to incorporate the information society and development plan into provincial development plans. We will also support the effective functioning of the East Hills Council and to facilitate the implementation of its regulations. It's a council that is headed by the minister and that advises government about what can we do to address the issue of e-skills, because e-skills has been identified as one of the key skills in the country. And we will develop a youth eco-operative sustainability strategy, and we will also start implementing that. And the same goes for an e-literacy training program for children in conflict with the law. We will also develop and implement a training program for computer-based functional literacy for rural women in all the provinces over the three-year period. And we have started with a national digital repository on cultural heritage, but in this NTF period we will ensure that it will be fully operational. Our strategy on e-content for SMEs will be developed and implemented, and we will effectively and adequately measure the information society development in South Africa to support decision making in this regard. And we will provide support, secretariat and professional, to the ISAT or Information Society and Development Institutional Mechanism, and as I mentioned before, those are the Intergovernmental Relations Forum and the FOSAC ISAT cluster. Perhaps I can just mention here that the Intergovernmental Relations Forum is chaired by the Minister of Communications, and the co-chair is the Minister of Public Service and Administration. But then it's comprised of MECs in all 9 provinces, who is appointed by the premiers of those provinces. And we ask that the MECs appointed should be responsible for economic and social issues in each of those provinces. Chairperson, honourable members, I mentioned before, and Harry also mentioned, that our whole strategic plan was done after, you know, we felt the impact of the economic meltdown, and we are not sure how it is going to affect us, because we asked for funding for certain programs which we didn't get, and we will go back to National Treasury with additional motivation. But we have ask ourselves, if we don't need that, and we have to implement what we call these top 5 priorities for this financial year, which are non-negotiable. And I've spoken to it, so I'll not go into the detail of what each of the 5 means. But we would rather forego on certain programs, but on these 5, we will not budge, and that is the broadcasting digital migration, which is one of the big cost drivers. The national radio frequency spectrum issues, cyber security, infrastructure, affordable, reliable, robust and secure ICT infrastructure, and information society and development hub program. We have started with a lot of programs with regard to each of these 5 priorities, and we feel it's our responsibility to make sure that we continue to achieve the overall priorities of government. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much for, I think it's a very systematic and coherent strategy plan. If you consider that the former minister passed on at fairly late in the term, and you've got a completely new ministerial team, and you've got half of your senior management acting. I think you've done a very good job, so my compliments to you. I'm sure there's a lot of questions. I'm going to throw it open to the members for comments and questions of clarity or even other more difficult questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a question of clarity. There's nothing, you mustn't read something behind my question. You said to announce the capacity of and an exercise oversight over state-owned enterprises. I think that's core business of the Department of Communications. But if you look, and I must tell you that if I look at the all the entities inside the Department of Communications, you've got a very, very big job at hand. Why the ECBC is going down, but the other state enterprises, I'm just mentioning them, why are they running well, the post office, Telkom? But why, and why didn't the Department of Communications didn't do something earlier and quicker? Because it's in a mess now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Mr. Perwani.
Thanks. I apologize to come late. I'm not sure whether in my absence maybe the issue which I remember at the chair, but I was trying to recall it before this meeting. The issue of the E-rate, where is it located? I'm not sure whether it's been reported upon, but I've got a vested interest in checking what is happening there. Remember last time that there was an indication that within the department they don't seem to be having the focus in monitoring what is happening around that issue. They were just referring us that it's being dealt with between USAFA, ICASA, and so on and so on. I would hope that they presented something better today. But as I'm saying, my apologies that it has been covered because I was not here.
No, it hasn't been raised also. Thank you for raising it. Any other questions? Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. Just a clarity, slide 31. You talk of e-literacy training program. You're doing that while those young people are serving sentences or after they completed their sentences or things like that.
Could you just understand in terms of human resource capacity, you said that there was a review and that a number of cities have been declared additional to the establishment. In addition to that, we have some vacant positions. Of which 77 are funded and 76 are unfunded. Can I just find out, if you refer to some of them funded and unfunded, is it because of the budget that was shrunk? And are they sort of, is it a double up on the city that are additional? Or, you know, can I just have a little bit of clarity on that? Because actually when they introduced themselves, it was interesting to see how many active positions they were. And indeed, I would like to support the chair that it was a very sleek presentation, bearing in mind that this department is sort of almost in flux. Second question relates to the state-owned enterprises. And I'm aware of the fact that we will also be engaging with them, but perhaps as the overseeing department, we could just get some clarity. We have a situation at present that, and I refer to the SABC. We have the SABC board with some vacancy, and then we have a situation that they are very specific provisions in the Act in terms of how decisions are taken. So how does the department see that this could be overcome? What would be their advice be to the incoming minister? How to solve that? It's a bit of a chicken and an egg situation at present, from where I'm sitting. But how would the department advise the minister to solve the problem that we have with some vacancies, specifically as chair and deputy chair, and certain quorums that require the chair and deputy chair? Well, the quorum requirement is 9, with the chair and the deputy chair, if I'm not mistaken, and therefore how do you resolve the situation? Because of the fact that what Honourable Van Abbas referred to, we have serious challenges facing the SADC as an organisation, and if it's one of the priorities of the department to make sure that the state-owned bodies are functioning effective, then this must be a matter of grave concern to the department, and we need a way forward. And as a committee, we would certainly like to investigate that further. I'm sure I'm not speaking out of my turn, Chairperson, but I think that is very critical. The whole nation is really looking forward to find guidance on from here where to now. Thank you.
Can I ask a few more questions so that you can think about that one? just from my side, I'll give you a chance, Arjani. This Uhurunet Sea and this submarine cable. Now, we had the former DG appearing before the committee, I think it was late last year, and we asked a very direct question. Was there cabinet approval for this concept? And her answer was no. Now, I want to know if there's cabinet approval now. Why is an item, if there isn't cabinet approval, why is an item on your program as one of the top priorities? I was shocked last year, I must be honest. I was quite shocked that they could come and present before the portfolio committee on this matter when there wasn't any clearance from cabinet for the launching of the Supermanet submarine cable. And I'd like, I mean, an absolute certainty on the matter. The second thing I want to ask is this Presidential National Commission. Again, it's a question that we had put to the former DG, and we wanted to know just what did this commission, what did it do? What did it do in the last year? Essentially, God, they hardly met for the whole of last year. I might be wrong there. So if it didn't meet, it didn't give any advice to the President. But we were told then that you are putting in place a whole staffing component, some kind of a sub-directorate or unit within your department. And we want to know why we're spending 34 million rand on something that's not working. Because the PNC, as I understand, was a whole number of international and national people who were out there in society, who were experts in this field or, you know, front runners in the ICT sector that we could tap into and get their experience and their wisdom. But now we're setting up a bureaucracy. And suddenly from the presidency is now coming into your department with full cost. And I just want to know, what are we trying to do here now? Because if the political decision by the executive is that we need such a commission, and if it's a Presidential National Commission, then shouldn't it go to the presidency? Because that's what the new Minister Colin Chavan is doing. They're trying to reallocate functions and tasks and entities and those kinds of things. And shouldn't it really go then to the presidency and not to the department? So first is just what does this thing do? And of what value is it to our society? And if we agree that it should stay, then where should it be located? And the third question is that you have a lot of senior acting positions from yourself and a number of other deputy teachers. What's the plan for filling those? I know you're a new minister and it might be premature to ask this question, but there are quite a few senior vacancies and I think we are concerned about that.
Sadanga? I want to ask
very general question. I've only been involved in this sector, as you know, for about 5 or 6 days, which just about makes me an expert now. But, you know, I haven't read most of the documentation, to be honest, but in the little interaction I've had, touching on some of the questions Mr. Van den Berg and Killian have raised, is this relationship between the department and SOEs. Because the more I look at the department, its budget, its setup, the more it looks to me like a conduit than a full-blooded department running now. This is the first impression on it. And what particularly worries me is that when you look at relationships where you create agencies to run government functions, and I want to put it government functions, because most of these communication functions, as far as I'm concerned, are government functions. You then decide how you run it. Do you run it through a department, a government department, or do you run it through an agency? Everywhere in the world, that's how you make the decisions on these things. You can do it one way or the other. There's no particular answer to it. In our case, most of it's been run through agencies, and they have the little adjective in front of them, independent. Now, what worries me is the relationship between policy and operational issues. Usually, in all these setups, the operational issues are clearly the domain of the entity, if it's a separate entity. But the policy issues are clearly issues which have a public account to it and have to be set by your government, which will be your executive and your parliament, your, particularly this committee. Now, what worries me when I look at these things superficially and the little time I've looked at it, it looks as if almost everything has shifted to the entity, the policy as well as the implementation. Some institutions like ICASA is absolute. I mean, you are nothing more than a postbox. You pass money through the institution to ICASA. Now, all these things I'm saying completely ignorantly and as a first impression. I may be completely wrong on all of them, and I'm not suggesting all of them should be treated exactly the same. But this overall impression I have that we've almost stepped back on policy, on norm standards, on objectives and so on, and left that plus operationalization made to these entities, which is one of the issues that definitely worries me about the SABC board, or the whole SABC, that is clearly almost a hands-off approach. To some extent there, that they just do everything. Now, this is the first time I'm going to ask this question. I think I'm going to ask this question many more times as we get to every entity. But I wanted to just hear from the department, have I got this thing completely wrong? Have I read it wrongly? Am I gut feelings that I'm having about these things, the little I've looked at the different acts, that we've bent too far to the one side. What would your response be to those ignorant questions?
Hopefully when I give an intelligent response to an ignorant question. Let's hold the other questions for now and get the responses and then we take a second round.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Those of you seeing us for the first time will let me tell you, in the spirit of the way we've done work before, we talk about ourselves as Team DFC. So I think with the coming Saturday and the beginning of the FIFA World Cup, we have a team here that plays this game, so it is a team that is going to assist me in dealing with the questions. All the questions, Harry, related to the state-owned entities will be dealt with by my colleague, Harry Matavati. And as we go through the other questions, the rest of the colleagues will kick in. Can I just to start off with, just to get the issue of the actors that is around here. The position for the director general of the post has been advertised Sunday, a week ago, 2 Sundays ago. So we are basically in the process, I think the closing date is coming up, so the appointment will happen. I'm acting the position that I was filling in the department, that of Chief Operations Officer and Deputy Director General for Governance and Administration, I had to appoint somebody there to act on my behalf. With regard to the other Brighton position, Mr. Mujalere, who's acting DDG for policy development, is with the decision to establish the Maraca Airfield Institute, Dr. Harold Vesel was the Deputy Director General for Policy Development. Because of the nature of this work, we decided to second him in the position of acting CEO. But he still sits on the structure against the acting Deputy Director General. So we have had discussions with our minister to look at the operationalization of the Maraca Airfield Institute as well as the formalization of the position of CEO so that the position of DDG policy development can be vacated and it can be advertised, because currently we can't do that. With regard to other vacant senior management positions, I'm not sure, Mr. Vardy, whether you were chairperson then, because when we came before the portfolio committee last year, after we started implementing our new approved structure, there were a number of vacant senior management positions that would be chief directors and directors, and we committed to fill the 60 critical positions by June of last year, which we did achieve, and we did that with the money available. So when we got the allocation earlier this year, we said we will have to go again to see if those unfunded positions, funded positions, that we do know that we have money for, what are we going to fill? We are now in the position not just to fill senior management positions, but also other critical middle management positions because of our privatization process last year. Okay, Mr. Matavati.
Thank you, Acting DG. I will deal with the finance and SOE, starting with the SAPC. To say that there's a number of challenges, of course, that we were aware of. The first one has to do with the funding of the public broadcaster. I think it's universally accepted that the model that we have currently is not workable, where the majority of the public funding comes purely from the advertisement. So there is work underway. Between ourselves, DOC, National Treasury, as well as the SABC, to make sure that at least in the coming medium-term expenditure framework, we have proposals that will begin to address this problem, and we'll do this also through legislation. I must hasten to say though that it's not given that, especially under the current climate, that government would be able to fund SABC 100%. I think we're looking at the plans, we're looking at best practices throughout the world, and we have to adopt what is feasible for South Africa. But for us, that is the number one problem, and through legislation. The acting DG did touch on the broadcasting bill, and we're also looking at that legislation to correct some of those anomalies. We also are aware that there are governance challenges at the SABC, governance challenges in overall. And in that regard, I guess the question is, what is the DOC and the Ministry of Communications doing about it? We enter into shareholder complex on an annual basis with these entities. We would on periodically monitor the performance of this shareholder complex, and over a period of time, a year or two, we've been aware of these challenges that the SABC is now coming to a crunch. And the late minister on more than one occasion has met with the board, has written to the board to address some of the challenges, the governance challenges that we're talking about. Also the current minister has really taken this as one of his number one priorities amongst others, to say we need to find a solution that is currently besieging the public broadcaster. And as I said, he's at it is one of his number one priorities. He's met with the board, he's talking to the he's written to the treasury, and so in, you know, I'm sure he will talk to that at some stage, Mr. Vadi. I mean, that's the SAPC. I would maybe come back to that later. But also to say that we've also picked up challenges around financial and budgetary controls, and we've met with the SAPC, and we've clearly said to the SAPC, we understand you are pleading for funding, but we believe that first and foremost we need to correct the challenges that you have internally, because, you know, we can't you know, just throw money into a black hole, and that they are working on. We engaged them even last night. I was talking to the CEO, but even as a DOC and National Treasury, we have this as a number one priority. Maybe on the question whether the DOC is abdicating its policy making responsibilities, to say the answer is no. I mean, if you look at our program, quite clearly in the next 3 years, we talk about developing policy, an integrated policy on ICT, broadcasting bid, BDM policy. So the core of the DOC, if you like, is to develop policy, and the acting DG spoke at length to the program that will be engaged in as DOC in developing that policy. If you look at the agencies that we have, the Post Office, for argument's sake, Centrec and the SABC, I think globally, this is how you know these entities are run and set. And it's not only South Africa, I think this is globally throughout the world. And what we can do with the SOEs, as our delivery arm, we would, you know, government would, in its planning process, come up with a medium-term strategic framework over a five-year period. And once that is agreed, which was recently the case, we will then take the strategic framework and sit down with the SOEs to say, how do we align their businesses to ensure that we meet the government objectives of delivery. They are delivery arms. They are the implementations of some of the policies that we have as a country. They haven't accepted our responsibility, or haven't abdicated our responsibilities. There could be, you know, maybe one or two cases where we might want to look at that. I mean, to say maybe the results of this world, has it worked as well as we had intended to? And we maybe need to do a case study and take an appropriate decision. But by and large, those entities, you know, government can't run an entity as I mean, if you look at Centrec, extremely technical, competitive environment today, where you need almost instant decision making to run an entity of that nature. And within government, you know, sometimes we tend to take a bit longer. But the answer, honourable member, is definitely no. Our key is policy development and delivery.
Can I just intervene slightly here? Because I don't want to lose this thing in the SADC. I've had a chance to look at the Articles of Association, and two clauses struck me. One is that the SADC was the board. It was supposed to have submitted to the department quarterly reports. And two, they were supposed to have submitted monthly reports of the financial situation. Now, what I'd like to know from you is that from the time that this new board was appointed, was January last year till today, have you received those quarterly reports? And did you receive the monthly financial reports? And if you did, then I'd like to know what are the department's response in dealing with this financial crisis that you could have seen, you should have seen it coming. What did you do about it? And if you didn't receive the report, so why didn't you demand it?
No, thanks, sir. We have you know, sat down and gone through their details, financial statements, and as I said, their cash flow requirements, where they've came to us and say we require cash flow injection in now and maybe a guarantee going forward. You know, we've looked at the financials, which now we're looking full scale financials almost on a weekly basis to say what is going on there. And we said to them, we believe that there are things that can happen internally at the SABC to begin to alleviate the cash flow challenges. So we're looking at that, the financials, the income statement, other than just looking at quarterly reports now. So we've really moved on, given the importance of the challenge that we have at the SABC. In terms of the quarterly reports, of late, I'm sure one of my colleagues is here, we're receiving those quarterly reports from the SABC. Previously, the SABC was not timelessly giving us the information.
What is of late?
I think in the last 3-4 quarters we've been getting the reports from the SABC. We've been getting those reports from the SABC. We also have been aware of some of the challenges that you're referring to. For argument's sake, when we looked at the expenditures, the question is, did we see this coming? And in part, yes, we did. And in part, we did say to the SABC that prior to embarking on expenditures, they need to make sure that there is money available to do that. And the late minister has written to them around a number of areas.
I'm asking this because we are going to request those documents, the correspondence of the late minister, including copies of the quarterly reports, and whichever copies you have of the financial report. But that is going to be absolutely critical if we're going to be instituting an inquiry for the removal of the board. And if they fail to submit those documents, that's television of duty. And there's advocates there and there's other legal people. To my common understanding, that's television of duty. Somebody's going to have to account for that. So can I put it on record that we want whatever copies you have before next week, before they appear, before this committee next week, Thursday, so that we can start looking at it.
Chairperson, on the same question, can I just ask something? I think the main thing here is the whole situation at the SABC is deteriorated over a long time. And I think the worst of this all is the public of South Africa, that the SABC is supposed to give information, to make them laugh or whatever. And remember, television said, or a radio, is one of the only things that people have in the rural areas of South Africa to know what is going on in our country. And I think the saddest of this all is the situation at the SABC is reflecting very bad on the Department of Communication. And when it's reflecting bad on the Department of Communication, it reflects bad on this portfolio committee. Because we are here to do our oversight role, and I think that is not necessary. Thank you, Chairperson.
One question in the list, so that I understand that you want us to move from the SABC one and go to other things. But I just want to check, because you remember that late last year, when SABC visited the portfolio committee, there was no indication of any financial constraint from the SABC. Everything was well. But the question which I want to ask that, was the department at that time, I can't remember the month last year, was the department at that time aware that the SABC is moving towards a financial problem? Because, Chair, you see, they've made that presentation without disclosing that there was a financial problem. Now, I don't remember the department even rectifying, unless if they don't follow
what SABC is doing, but I'm just saying I don't remember any correction of that. Or maybe at that time, just forgetting the month, was the time when SABC was not submitting the required document and so on. That particular point. Because as a member is saying that the back stop with the department, because SABC is supposed to come back to and present those particular documents and so on. I just want to check that whether at that point they were aware about this financial constraint and this portfolio committee was set in that way. Because it could not happen that within 8 months or 6 months we can have such a huge loss of finances, whereas we've come just to Parliament without saying anything.
Advocate Telanga? So there was a question which is absolutely vital in my mind, which hasn't been answered by the Honourable Killian. The question is simply this: the quorum in the legislation of the SABC board says a quorum is 9, including your chair and your deputy chair. Once your deputy chair and your chair resign, you cannot ever reach a quorum. So you cannot make a decision as the board. Now what are we doing and what is being put in place? At the moment, that board is a dead duck. It cannot make a single decision. Meantime, we are told that there are hundreds of millions rand leaking in the management. Now, what is it that we're putting in place in the meantime? Or what is it that we're informing the board that now, in this period, that you are dead duck and you can't make decisions? What are we putting in place to protect this government to not incur further monies and so on? Because if they do, like even the decision to appoint an acting board member, that's illegal. Because the question is not whether they've got the power to do so. The question is they cannot form a quorum to make a decision like that. So it's not even a question whether they've got the power or not. It's simply they haven't got a chair and a deputy, therefore they cannot make a single decision anymore. What are we doing from now till we're able to fix up this thing to avoid huge disasters? Firstly, in terms of decisions being made which are illegal, or decisions not being made and things happen in the meantime. I think that question we need to have, we'll obviously speak to the board itself next week, and they can have to give us an answer so we can already tell them, we're going to answer the question. But in the meantime, we, this portfolio committee and the department, have to do something to protect us. Because all those decisions that are made or not made are illegal.
Yeah, no, those are intelligent questions. Mr. Matevati, are you going to respond to those? You want to follow up so that we didn't put it right with the SABC issue?
Chairperson, I just wanted to make sure that in their deliberations with the SABC over the past year, and you refer to the quarterly reports, etc., what is of a concern is that it seems that the whole structure was totally sort of overburdened at the top. Some figures were mentioned about 11% of the top structure earning 24% blah 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 of the total sort of financial budget for salaries. So all of those sort of issues should have alerted, I believe, the department at an earlier stage if those were included in the quarterly report. Secondly, I would like to take very firm and very quick action because it also affects one of the other key priorities of the department, and that is to support SMEs. There are certain companies and individuals that were making production for the SABC and they're not being paid, and I mean that flies in the face of a key strategic priority that those people have to go begging and go stand picketing along the road. I just want to know if there is a sense of urgency on the side of the department to really get to the bottom of all of this. Because we will engage the SABC next week, but they must know that these are the questions that we will put on the table. Thank you, Chair.
One more on the SABC. Okay, can we hold this one?
Thank you, Chair. As I indicated, it's really one of our minister's number one priority, including the department. Yeah. So we're mindful and we're taking steps to correct that. On the quota, we have taken advice. We are aware of that challenge. Minister has met with the board, I'm not sure if you did indicate, but we took advice on that the moment we became aware of that challenge. Minister is aware, and as I said, is continuously, I'm sure he would have passed that message to the board, but again, we haven't had their legal opinion on the matter, and therefore, you know, we would look into that as well. In terms of whether we are aware of the losses, we are aware that the losses were coming down. But I think what also took us by surprise, and I guess everybody else, is the economic climate, because with a drop, the anticipated growth in revenue never quite happened, you know. And as a result, you actually ended up with a bigger problem. So yes, we are aware that it's coming down, but we did not anticipate the effects of the downturn, because therefore SABC were not able to raise the types of revenues they had budgeted to raise, and that had an acceleration of making those losses. In a nutshell, I think I've answered those questions. But to reiterate, it's one of ministers' number one priority. Talking to the presidency, talking to the board, talking to government, it's written to Minister Godan to say, you know, we need a solution ASAP at the SAP.
I'll be comfortable and satisfied with the responses. They're very tentative. I think that's be fair. This is it's actually an important responsibility of the minister. He did indicate that he's leaving early, because I think it is in the realm of the executive that will have to deal with this. It's not, you know, directly an official responsibility. The shareholder is the minister, in the sense, on behalf of government. So perhaps we're being a little bit fair, but unfair. But I think the airing of views. Oh yeah, the slip of the tongue. But I think the airing of views is important. It does give a sense that we are extremely concerned about the situation. And I can indicate by next week, if nothing dramatic happens at the SABC, if the situation further deteriorates, this committee is going to have to make a decision. So I want to alert the members that it's going to be a very, very important meeting, apart from the strategic plans and the financials, etc. But we will have to make a decision. The law was amended precisely to confront this kind of eventuality. And last year we took a lot of flak from the opposition when we tried to pass this bill. But I think now the reality has dawned on us. And there's a legal mechanism for this committee to take action. And I think we must see whether we can rise to the challenge. But let's leave that discussion and debate for next week and Thursday.
No, just on the general policy issue, you know, I know you're dodging the question, but maybe correctly so. But you see, I'm not disputing that you draw policy. I mean, there's good. You develop policy for cyber security, but what I'm asking, each of these institutions exist. What is the policy framework you set for that institution? And what are the priorities and objectives that go with it? So when they appear before this committee, say Centec for example, we can say the policy that you have set for Centec, what they have to achieve is this. The objectives and priorities you've set are this. Now, when we speak to Centec, we can see whether they've met it. And whether we agree that that's enough or not enough. So that's what I'm really talking about, is for each institution, ICASA. I mean, ICASA for me, is the most vital institution in this country. It decides on major issues. But I can't find a policy anywhere that we set for them as a government. It seems to me that they're setting policy. Now, I may be completely wrong. I may be reading the wrong places. So that is what I'm asking. Before we meet with these institutions, can we for each institution, Chair, if you're happy with that,
for each institution, what is the policy framework for that institution? What are the objectives and priorities they must achieve? So in all fairness, when they appear in front of us, we can say you've actually went further than the department expected you, or you've done less, or you're not in line with the policies we've asked you to do. You're now busy with businesses that you shouldn't be involved in. You should have, you know, that's the type of questions we should be asking. And that's really the information. Not that I don't have any doubt that you make policies. But is it for each institution? Have they been made? So I don't want you to answer anything. We can just get all that information before we meet them. That will be useful.
Sorry, just in that vein, yes, I absolutely concur with Honourable Delange. For instance, we need to know exactly what the mandate is of those institutions. Because, for instance, if the Broadcasting Association, what you call them, NABC, if their mandate is to provide sort of cultural sort of opportunities, etc., then we need to make sure that the funding model supports the mandate. If it is no, you must run an organization which must make a profit, then it's totally different. So we just need to know, is the mandate suitable for the institution, and do they in fact meet the mandate?
Can I just say, can we get a policy template from the department for each entity? Presented to us to help us work through some of that. I think it's an interesting way of looking at things. It might be useful in terms of exercising oversight. Thank you. Can we then move on to the other questions? I'm going to, can you hold those, because we've still got a basket of questions to answer here.
Chairperson, just to clarify on the FABC. Thank you for that summary, because as you said quite correctly, Minister is running this. I will undertake to make sure that Minister is aware of this. Now, the concerns raised by the portfolio committee as he rolled out his action. Can I then ask that DDG Clarko deals with your questions with regard to the Presidential National Commission on Information Society and Development, and also with the e-literacy training program?
Thank you, DG Chairperson and honorable members. If I can maybe start with the easier of the two questions, the one on e-literacy training program. We are working with the Department of Correctional Services. The Department of Correctional Services has got a program to capacitate young offenders. And they've got categories at what stage these young people then go for training. Currently, we are working with them, and what we are contributing in their program is the e-literacy specific training. And then they provide the whole infrastructure. They even identify the young people who are ready for training. That was with regards to the e-literacy training program. Now, coming to the PNC, maybe if I can give a brief background, maybe to assist honourable members. The commission was established in 2001 by the president. He announced it in the State of the Nation address. To say that because of the importance of the sector, the Department of Communications was more into policy and infrastructure, but that issues of information society were going beyond the policy and infrastructure, and then there was a need to establish a structure that will facilitate and coordinate different government departments, because the Department of Arts and Culture would have responsibility in terms of content, and the Department of Science and Technology in terms of R&D and innovation, and the different other department applications, e-education will be the Department of Education, and so on and so forth. But this was also in line, Chair and honorable members, with what the international experience. We have looked at different countries like Malaysia and Finland, and so where you found that issues of information society were not really more centrally based. If you look at the Department of Communications, it's operating within issues of information society or ICTs were imagined to be impacting across the different sectors and the society broadly, hence the process of the World Summit on Information Society, which then started. What became clear, Chair, was that from the World Summit on the Information Society, was that countries would be expected, over and above the structure that they have, to establish a structure that would then drive the information society. For example, if you look at the outcome of the World Summit on the Information Society itself, it's not only confined to the ITU. It is there in UNESCO, it is there in World Health Organization, because it's really cut across the different sectors. A decision at the time was taken, Chair, that you do have experts, both international and local experts, who are advising government, but that you needed to have then a secretariat, whose role will be then to coordinate, as and when the advisors meet and advise the president and government, who will then meet and then coordinate, the secretariat will then coordinate and direct the different recommendations. To say, for example, if we identify health and education as the priority, to then say, but what you need there is not only the Department of Education. You will need the Department of Education for content, you will need the Department of Communication for infrastructure, and other different departments, depending on the application. So the secretariat was seen as playing the role of coordinating. Hence, in the Information Society and Development Plan that Cabinet approved in February of 2007, which was really a framework for the building of the Information Society in the whole country. What was contained in that framework was also an institutional mechanism. That is saying, what structures do you want? Other than the line function department, the plan was also calling for this secretariat, which would play a role of facilitating and providing the coordination across the different government departments. Chair, it's true that the PNC itself as the advisors have not met, and that last year when I came to present to the portfolio committee, I tried to explain that. What happened was that the structure was big. When it was established in 2001, it was about 32 advisors, local ICT experts, 32 of them. And at the time when the appointments were made, they were made in terms of the capacity of people, in terms of the position that they occupied at the time. The different director generals and the different CEOs of certain companies, state-owned IT agencies, and so on and so forth. And even when people resigned and left this position as DG and everything, now it was no longer clear to say were they still advisors or not. So, and the chairperson, the only person who remained full-time, then also had the responsibility of the Department of Communications as the Director General. But our relationship, chairperson, with the Department of Communications, it was really twofold. On the one hand, it was because now the Director General of the Department of Communications was the chairperson, and who was the only person who was full-time when the commission was established. But also that in terms of the work of the commission, the work of the PNC, the work of the PNC was essentially closely related to the work of the DOC. But it will have separate strategic plans and separate programs in terms of its work. What we have done, Chairperson, it was to engage the presidency just before the end of the new administration to clarify, to say Cabinet has approved certain institutional mechanisms. And the response from the presidency was that the work of the Information Society was an important work that Cabinet has taken a decision to pursue, and that work would have to be accommodated. In the latest program from the presidency on the cluster, the work of the IC cluster, it is still identified, but they had said that because the Minister of Communications maybe currently would have to play the role of championing the work, would have to find a way of having the work of the Information Society within the ICT infrastructure as a sub-program, as a sub-cluster of the ICT of the infrastructure cluster. We have had a discussion with the new minister, our minister, and our minister chair has given direction in that we need as the leadership of the whole department to come back to him, because he needs now to advise the president to say, here's the structure, and then what do you want him to recommend to the presidency, and for him, for us to give him different options of what decision needs to be made. But finally, to say, Chair, the work of the Information Society does enhance the work of the DOC, in that the work of the DOC is to say, you have to provide infrastructure. If you take the Dinaledi school project, for example, it is the work that was driven within the PMC itself. But it involves a number of other departments. The DOC has got a role to play there, which is to roll out the infrastructure working with CENTE. But there are a number of other departments that have to input into that process, and that has to play a role in that process. But there are also other government departments that are involved in the Information Society program, which is the Department of Arts and Culture, the Department of Science and Technology, and other different government departments, and all of them are participating in the Information Society and Development Cluster. Thank you.
Chairperson, just to say that, with regard to the place and the role and the functions, future functions of the PNC, when we became aware of the thinking that there would be, well, at that time we didn't know it was necessarily going to be a ministry, but there was definitely going to be a NPC National Planning Commission, as well as the NME's ministry or division in the presidency. We did look at how that is going to impact on what the BNC is doing. So all of those issues will be addressed in the scenario document that the minister requires from us. And it's a matter of urgency. It's not so long term, so we have to get back to him very soon. Can I ask Dr. Xiangwei to address your question, Chairperson, on the submarine cable?
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, the Hornet submarine cable project is a NEPAD-driven project that seeks to connect African countries to the rest of the world through a undersea submarine cable. In 2007, Parliament ratified the protocol on the regulatory and policy framework for this particular project. And this, otherwise known as the Kigali Protocol, this protocol calls on participating countries to support the rollout through a number of interventions, one of which is to harmonize your policy and regulatory environments in keeping with the protocol. The second is to forward the names of entities, licensed operators, that will participate within the equity structures of the Gurunet cable. And just to remind or to reiterate that the requirements from our side is not a cash injection or a cash investment into this. It's just providing the support that I've listed before. And that is why it's on our program of action today. For the period. Thank you.
But that doesn't answer whether Cabinet has approved it. I mean, it's one thing to ratify an agreement. We ratify hundreds of agreements. It's got no legal effect until you put something into statute or taken some step to do so. So has Cabinet approved that we go ahead with the project as it's being one of the priorities? I think that was the question, if I understood it. That's not the
answer. Honourable members, clearly I'm not privy to whether that decision has come out. The Honourable Chair said that the former Director General said Cabinet did not. We will verify that. We are of the understanding that the decision was taken at least at the Cabinet Lehota, that's the of July, that we would support this particular project. So we can verify that for you.
Yeah. We do have a pre-jubilating Director General.
Sorry?
I'm saying we do have the acting Director General. Is there any cabinet decision on the matter?
understanding was that the decision was taken by the cabinet report level of, if I'm not mistaken, June 2006. And decisions, binding decisions, in our understanding, are taken by the cabinet, although it is what they call an extended cabinet. A decision is taken forward and being implemented. So we regarded that as the cabinet decision.
Can we verify that thing and just check on the documentation of the previous cabinet minutes on this particular item? Because I distinctly remember the former TC saying that there isn't a cabinet decision.
Okay, the next two questions is the question on the e-rate, and DDG Sakesi will address that. There's a question about the HR capacity, acting DDG Baloy will address that. And I think I just want to ask our acting DDG policy development to just add to some issues raised by Honourable Member Delanga regarding the policies. And I think then we delve with all the questions.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Members. In terms of the e-rate, since the proclamation of the ECA Electronic Communication Act, the implementation of the e-rate faced quite a number of challenges, mainly because at the time ICASA had not drafted and finalized the regulations. But ICASA has done that. I think they finalized it at the beginning of March this year. And since the gazetting of the regulations on e-rate, we've actually formed a steering committee that consists of the main five operators. That is Telkom, Neotel, Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C, mainly focusing on the implementation now that we've got the regulations. And in that steering committee, we also have the Department of Education. But the main thing is that now, the fact that we have regulations, it's mainly about awareness. So that schools at both provincial and local levels, that they are aware that they can actually apply for e-rate. That's the one part. But the second part is that there are schools that already have got access to the internet. Those schools also, they need to apply to qualify. So it's about new schools and the schools that already have got existing internet services. So the campaign will ensure that we cover that. There is also, I think, information on the website of Department of Education in terms of how schools can apply for e-rate. But our role as the Department of Communication is really to facilitate the implementation of that in collaboration with the Department of Education. Thank you.
Chair and Honourable Members, thanks for the question. With regards to the human resources capacity, the 30, you know, that are said to be displaced in the department, I would like to give a brief background. When the department reviewed its structure, you know, in 2007, which was approved last year, end of January, we did not integrate the Institute of Software and Satellite Applications, which is an institution based here in Cape Town in Krabo. And of the 30, of the 30 positions, 13 of those are staff at ESA. The reason being that we are busy repositioning ESA and we are in the process of finalizing the structure, you know, of ESA. So the 13 staff members actually form part of the 306. So we pay them and treat them as employees in the department because of the ease work that is currently being done at ESA. And then as the acting director general spoke about the Miraka E-Skills Institute, we are also busy finalizing the structure for the E-Skills Institute, and we have decided of the 30 staff members, you know, 3 employees are currently seconded, you know, to provide support to the Miraka E-Skills Institute. So in essence is that we've got 14 staff members. When we reviewed the structure, it was based on operational requirements, and then we agreed with the organized labor, concluded an agreement, which is collective, to say that we are not going to lay off other staff, you know, that could have been displaced through the process. So we are in the process currently of placing these 14 staff members because of it's a negotiated process, and some of them wouldn't want to move to other sections. So in essence, the staff members, that the number of positions that are currently occupied in the structure is 269, but in our books we've got 306 employees that we currently, paying. And then of the vacant positions, we're currently engaging the minister because we did not want to, start with the recruitment process without necessarily, after this process of completing the strategic plan, we'll get guidance from the minister. We'll prioritize those positions based on creating a balanced structure. So the 77 positions is what we have quoted and prioritized, and the money that we have been allocated, in the department. And the 76, which we say they are unfunded, we don't have money, to fill them. So we'll fill them, in phases, should treasury decide to allocate more resources for human resources.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I will just talk to briefly on the issue of the policies that informs the mandates of various SOEs. I think in the main, we do have policies in the form of white papers that pronounces on the mandates of many of the institutions. For example, the white paper on telecommunications pronounces on issues of the universal service, which begins in terms of the act to provide for the establishment of the universal service and asset agency. And also the white paper on broadcasting clearly talks to the issues around the role of a public broadcaster and the role of the signal distributor Centec. And also the white paper on postal policy make pronouncements on the mandate and the role of SAPO in terms of what it's supposed to do, effectively. And also the Electronic Communication Transactions Act pronounces on a number of other areas like the Dot Redner, the cyber inspectorate and so on, in terms of what they should do and so on and so on. And I think we'll then provide such information to the portfolio committee so that we can be able to provide for such. I just want to say that I think in going forward, I think what is important, I think when you acknowledge the fact that the sector that we operate in is quite very dynamic, things change, and I think it is important also as we go forward that we are able to look at how do we begin to, within this changing environment, in a convergent environment, begin to, begin to redefine some of the mandates of these institutions in line with the global best practice in terms of how we should deal with some of the issues. And I think it is for this reason that as a department, we have committed to develop an integrated national ICT policy, which will then begin to bring all these aspects together so that you can be able to clearly define in terms of where do we play as a state, where do the private sector play, and so on and so on. I think that policy, I think, when we come with it, it should be able to assist us to be able to have a harmonized legal legal and policy framework that will ensure that in South Africa, as we move into the information society, we're able to move also our institutions that has given them the mandate to assist us to be able to deliver on some of those things. Obviously, of course, there are challenges, with regard to the global meltdown, and I think we need to respond to that. But I think importantly, as we work in government, we've got the industrial policy now, which begins to really redefine how we should be able to deal with some of the issues from industrial perspective. So in light of that, that policy that we are going to be developing will be able to address some of the issues. On the question of the SABC, as the acting DJ said, we are in a process. I think we've concluded this. We will be coming to the portfolio committee with the public service broadcasting bill. In essence, is to try and say how do the SABC, the public broadcaster, going forward in a digital environment, play its role in terms of ensuring that people have got access to the information. And critical to that is the issue of whether the SABC can generate revenue if it does generate revenue, at how much? And if it doesn't, how do we fund it? I mean, it's a public broadcaster. So all of those questions then will be able to be addressed in that public document. And I think we should be able soon to be able to publish a discussion document on those areas, so that we can be able to get the views from the public in terms of what kind of a public broadcaster we're doing in the SABC going forward. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We've got quite a few hands up here, Ms. Magali.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, Chair, I just want to make a proposal on few issues. If I'm listening very well, the department has talked about this presidential commission, and the question was asked, there was an approval. If I'm not mistaken, there was approval of the establishment of that by the department. And the department has just said that they are going to develop a discussion paper. Can I make a proposal, Chairperson? Because I feel as politicians, we need the department, once they develop that paper, we engage the department, so that whenever their decision, whatever they are going to inform the minister, is informed by current political situation, we have a new administration. Secondly, Chairperson, I think the last speaker, I think I'm going to do the same proposal. He is talking about that they are being guided by the industrial, what do you call it? India. And as the department, they will have to engage the society. Can we also, Chairperson, because as this portfolio committee, we have a responsibility to give guidance on issues, on policy issues, logically, before they can move forward. So what I'm saying, Chairperson, I think Parliament, the power resides here before they can implement things.
Okay.
Chairperson, this is a disadvantage of talking at the end of everything. I was concerned about this presidential national commission. Partly, I have been covered by the response given to us of the role of that. But now that people are not giving us a clear indication of whether this is approved, this is quite confusing to me, because I was concerned about the slide 14 when talked about the media term strategy on the improvement of quality of life of poor, prioritizing the second economy. Like, and when you go on to the implement how they are going to do this, the how part of it, I see the target is women, youth, and people with disability. Now, I was asking myself whether this decision has been taken now, lately, or it has been in the pipeline, because I don't think it addressed what we needed in prioritizing the second economy. Now that you talk about women and disability, we had this OSW, which was supposed to improve the status of women, and I don't think that this has been exercised. And I needed to know whether is this slide referring to the present tense, or whether it has been in the pipeline. Now, what I'm getting is that we are not sure whether this has been approved after the cabinet, the quota. And also, on this slide, when I read it, I
I'm concerned because the information society, as it says, enabled youth, and here it says the youth. Why the discrimination in the youth? What does it mean actually? The enabled MJ. I need some explanation on this. Because if you are talking about programs of the youth and you bundle the other youth with women and disabled people, what is the difference? What youth are you talking about? For some instance, you talk about an enabled youth. What is it that they are talking about?
Okay. May I make a request? I'm accepting the response or the progress in terms of the e-rate. If there's any program, a clear program we target in dealing with the issue of the e-rate, I don't want to take a word which is saying ICASA is in the regulation. There's a steering committee. Surely that steering committee should have a target, a program with target, where they are going to be able to evaluate themselves in terms of the implementation of that. When I arrived in Parliament, the first legislation about e-rate was passed in 2001. We are in 2009 now. It's still not clear. That's why Chair has been requesting, whether it's possible from the department, to give us a clear program and target in terms of the implementation of the e-rate. I'm sure you have been listening to the President during the State of the Nation Address. The issue of those disadvantaged schools has been the priority in terms of linking them to the mainstream of the ICT activities and so on. So I won't take the ease of general statement like we always do as politicians. We need to come to target and a clear program in terms of that so that we can be able to come back and evaluate in terms of the implementation and what problem are we having. Is it possible to get that?
Can I just have two more questions? One is a follow-up on the PNC. See, my difficulty is I look at your slide when you start to put mandate and vision and mission and programs. Are you setting up a department within a department? Is this an embryo of another state entity? What is this thing? I can understand a secretariat that is located in a department that does administrative support for the PNC because it's people from gathering from outside of government, and you need a secretarial support unit or team to do the administrative and the admin and those kinds of things. But now, I mean, you're almost setting, if you look at your presentation, you're setting up almost two things here. One is the department, then there's a separate thing called PNC. Tell us if this is going to be another SOC or some other, tell us that. If an executive decision has not been taken, tell us that also. So I think we need certainty on this. We do have reservations about it. I don't think it's in the realm of this committee to decide whether it should or shouldn't go. But I think we can indicate that we would have, or I would personally, but that's not a committee resolution, serious reservation about setting up another bureaucratic, you know, unit. And when it starts, and that's very clear. Then one last thing I want to raise is this issue of the relationship that we were talking about early on. Now, a few weeks ago, we had the department engaged in legal action on the Vodacom issue. And the department took a position different from another state entity called ICASA. Of course, we will question ICASA when they come to us about how they arrived at that decision. Mr. Mclana is here, so we can listen to them, that we are going to be engaging on that issue. But how does it happen that two state structures, two government structures, end up with two different legal positions?
OK.
Secretary Person, let's start from the back. With regard to PNC, your last question said about an executive decision, whether an executive decision was taken about this animal we call PNC. As we mentioned before, in order to enable our minister to make that executive decision, that is the exercise that we are looking at. To see, you know, are we creating a department within a department? Can it be absorbed within the department called something else? Should part of that move to the National Planning Commission? Those are the different options that minister wants us to address in that document team so that we can make the decision. So that is just the short answer to that. I'm not sure whether McQuinning wants to add. Okay. But I took note of the proposal of the Honourable Member that we would come back to the Portfolio Committee on this matter. With regard to ICASA, but specifically the opposing opinions, DDG, what about you, please?
Well, sir, I mean, as you said, Chair, ICASA would come and also explain that. From government perspective, I think we worked on this transaction for over a year, more than a set of approvals at cabinet level, you know. And you would have noted that ICASA had initially not opposed the transaction. Over a weekend, you know, a day before the listing, ICASA changed its mind. They did not speak to us. But I guess if you ask me, it was a bit. It's unfortunate it's left, but it was a bit unfortunate that ICASA did that because it undermines their integrity to take a decision of that nature and change it in the manner that they did. Having said that, maybe my colleague Mujadele can talk also the issues of independence, because with that policy, ICASA implements the policy independently of the DOC, which we have to respect. But also, as I said, you know, ICASA, there would be nothing wrong with ICASA going through the entire process and taking a decision one way or another. But I guess the challenge here is the fact that it changed its decision at a very short space of time. Government had a duty to protect, because really we believed under the circumstances this was, and we understand all the challenges that have been raised, but this was the best route to go. But because I'm talking to the minister, I mean, Chairperson, when they come here.
Chairperson, on the issue of e-rights, we do not have a program with targets in the strategic plan as yet. We are busy working, as DG Sikesi explained earlier, to talk about, you know, what is the value going to be and all that. But we would be in a position shortly to provide that information to the portfolio committee. But once we've reached agreement as to how this is going to be rolled out, we can set the targets and bring it to the portfolio committee. But because it's not just us that is doing this, it's a collaborative effort. So we need to reach agreement with everybody to chase the same target. And we don't want to preempt what is going to happen. So, I would ask that you give us the opportunity to finalize our discussion with the relevant role players, and then I commit that you do bring it back to the portfolio committee. And we will put, we will give priority attention to that, because it needs to be finalized.
Can it reflect on their top priority? My worry is that, I'm not seeking their top 5 priority. The issue of security. To me, it's a matter of life and death from where I'm coming from. So I need it in the top 5 priority.
Chairperson, thank you. I think that's a very good point. applicants. He knows us. In fact, I think he can come under the priority that talks to Eastfield because it's going to contribute to that. And so we will put it in our top 5 priority. Can I just ask DDG in Clarkville just to talk a little bit to the questions raised by the honourable member about not understanding the link between strategic goal 2 and 3 and the strategic objective? There was some question of clarity that was asked around that.
Just to add to my question, I just ended before I could express myself on this. On the human resource also, on the 426 positions, and the 306 employees, can they define exactly how many females and how many males?
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. Chair, following the Cabinet's approval of the Information Society and Development Plan in February of 2007, the Commission then looked at the implementation of that framework. How then do you take the country to this information society? And really it was to segment the society into young people, women, people with disability, and so on and so forth. And to say, who of these sectors of the population would we prioritize? And we decided at the time to prioritize young people. And working with the National Youth Commission, we then developed a youth ISAC program that was launched in June of that year, 2007, during the youth month. Now, strategic goal number 2 is to say you would like to have information society enable young people. That is the goal. That's what we want to achieve. Young people need to be in a position to participate in this information society, the society that will have all these ICT gadgets, irrespective of where these young people are. So that is the strategic goal. And the objective is then to focus on young people and ensure their active participation. That is the strategic objective. If I can just deal with that and say, we then had different programs. The first one was the youth e-literacy program that we initiated, where we took young people who are just young people with matric, and then in collaboration with Exxon University of Technology provided training for them, and then after the training these young people then were taken, this was part of the National Youth Service, were taken to schools, to support clinics, where you're looking at a situation where after you've provided them training, there's a community service that these young people do, and then following the community service, there are maybe exit opportunities where some of these young people then get jobs. These are young people who ordinarily would be unemployed and without skills. So that's the intervention that we are looking at. On the improving the quality of life of the poor, even this one, it was the second intervention, second economic intervention, but it focused on young people, where we took young people and then they established this youth e-cooperative. That program now, Chairperson, has benefited almost 2,000 young people with about 100 cooperatives nationally that have been established. In terms of our priorities, you would see that we are in this current year now looking at how can you sustain those cooperatives? But the cooperatives are there. They've been established. Young people have got these enterprises. It is now about what opportunities do you give them to ensure that you sustain? And these are young people who were unemployed and unskilled. You start them from scratch. You provide them a training, business training, technical training. and then from there working with CIPRO and Small Enterprise Development Agency and the DTRC. You've got a number of different players, including Umsobo in terms of the funding, capital, starting capital, to say they should get into the mainstream of the economy. That is an intervention, second economy intervention that we are referring to. So those, I think, are the two goals that I was trying to clarify. It's not a specifically GDYC program, but we just, if you like, segmented the society in terms of we've got a woman, we've got young people. If you look at one of the priorities in this MTF, it's not on young people, but it's on literacy on and rural women. We are working on a training program of computer-based functional literacy for rural women. Now we are moving now to it's another second economic intervention, but now focusing on women. Thank you.
Any other responses?
Okay. Thank you. As far as gender equity is concerned in the department, of the 306 employees in the department across the board, we are sitting at 65%. But when you look at, you know, gender equity at SMS level, that is our main target, you know, as approved by cabinet, we are currently sitting at 42%.
Is that here?
Thank you, Chairperson. You see, Chair, maybe I should also make another proposal to the department. Now that the last speaker, you've spoken about the affirmative action, the gender equity, can the department next time, when they come here, come up with a clear information, how many women in the department and their skills, at what level are they sitting, so that when we talk about this youth disability enabling the information youth society, we know exactly whom are we talking to. So can the department just bring us that information, because I know you have chief director that is dealing with that information. So we need that information, the department to report on that.
Chief and Honourable Mima, thank you. Some of the information is we've got a chief scientist that deals with mainstream gender issues, youth issues, children, people with persons with disability within the department as well as our SOEs. And that's much bigger programs just focusing on employment equity. The issue of employment equity is dealt with by the human resources, or well, not dealt with, it is guided by the human resources chief scientist. Because in order to achieve the target set by cabinet, and although the, you know, we are committed to achieve that still, although it should have been achieved by March, during the cabinet of Khutla, we were informed that government as a whole hasn't achieved it, that we are looking at what we're going to do to achieve that. So the DOC is committed. With regard to the information, we can bring it earlier. Actually, we were looking for our draft input for the annual report, because the kind of information that the Honourable Member was requesting is exactly in detail in the annual report, which will be tabling in terms of the requirement by September, October. But if the information is needed before then, we can provide it. We have it already.
All right, so maybe you should just submit a short document to us so that we can distribute it to the members. Are there any further questions? Ketanaka?
You know, when one looks at the vision, the mission, and the mandate, you know, it will be interesting for me to see over the last 15 years how communication has met some of these. As I sit here, I haven't got a clue. I'm going to go and listen to Centric, and I'm not going to know in terms of communication what our priorities flowing from our mandate vision, you know, how far we've gone on these different. It would be good if, I don't know if the farm has got something like that, but that should be available in times like this, if one can measure over 5-year periods at least how we're growing in the area of communication. Do we need a serious spurt to really move at level at other developing countries, or actually ahead of other I don't know, I haven't got a clue. And nothing here in this document tells me that. When you were talking, and I try and go back to the document, it tells me what your programs are, but it's not telling me what you're achieving through yourself or through your SOEs. And as someone new in the sector, I don't know how big a role we play in the economy, how small a role we play. This information, whatever you call it, what is it, information what? Society. How big is it? How small is it? How much have we grown in the 15 years? None of those objectives and things are here. So it would be good if we can get that information to help us. Well, you tell me. I'm sure others know, but I just can't see it. So that's just a recap.
Can I just check also, these 3 bills that you are talking about, they will be tabled in this year?
In the financial year.
Okay, so that will help us in terms of our programming and those kinds of things. Right. Alright, you want to respond to any of these things? It's fine. And there are no further questions, and I want to thank all the members for the session and the team that has come from the DOC. Members who are going to the Centec dinner, Rotanda is just telling me now that they said immediately after we complete our business. But I don't suppose you want to have dinner at 4:30. So can we say that we will meet at 6:00 outside courtyard? Would that be acceptable? Those who agreed to go, not everybody has agreed to go to dinner, so those who confirm, I don't know who has confirmed. 6:00 outside courtyard, would that be fine? Master, is it okay? Do you want to go for dinner now? I don't know. It's a bit early, isn't it? It's early, yes. So 6:00, will that be fine? Originally, it was scheduled for 7:00. Are you joining us for dinner? You go straight there? You go straight there, Mr. Bernadette, really? Who's going straight there? Because if that's the case, then we just meet there. Or do we need transport? 2 people. So 2 people need transport. Eric, you bring with your car.